This is CliffCentral.com.
Boy, Ben and C are trying to read each other's facial expressions first thing in the morning. They're hilarious. It's very funny.
No, I put my headphones on. I happened to look in his direction. And obviously he thinks this about him.
You didn't just look in my direction. You gave me a side-eye smirk. Something.
I didn't, really.
Cheshire Cat.
You were just looking at me.
Okay, I love you too, Ben. Let's get this moment over.
Why is it always a thing with you?
All right, well, hell of a way to start this morning. By the way, no Gord Laws today. He's got something on that, some client, blah, blah, blah. It's boring. I'm going to leave it to him. He'll explain it next week if you still care.
The most important thing is he isn't dying.
No, he's not dying. No. Gord's been on a remarkable health bend recently.
He really has. It's been the stretch of, it'll be known as the stretch of 2019 for Gord. He wakes up in the morning, puts a mark in his bedpost like, today I'm not dying. Still a good run is young Gordon.
So,
gotta be grateful for these things.
Yeah,
a couple of things to talk about today. In fact, there's a lot to talk about today, but we can get into some of the news later on. Ben is still glowing from his weekend away. He's obviously really enjoyed it, and he showed me some video and pictures of it. It looked really cool. It was that special,
Gareth. At the end of this week, you'll see the actual video on the YouTube channel.
Marvelous.
On the YouTube.
Well, yeah, because I told you guys a long time ago, I'm so worried about my memory going.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I may get dementia. It's in my family.
Really?
On my mother's side.
Oh, shit.
And I often forget things. But I think to myself, do I forget things from lack of stimulation or just the lack of ability to memorize things?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. Yeah.
So, therefore, I'm being so diligent about making things that I'll always have the memories. Unless YouTube crashes and burns.
Oh, man.
And then it'll all be gone.
Well, that could happen. You never know.
I hope not.
So there's
don't die, YouTube.
See, I was judging the PRISM Awards, which is the most important PR, Public Relations Awards.
I wish I'd known. I'd entered something.
Did you?
Did you?
Damn it.
You're being sarcastic.
Would you hook your brother up though?
For my own credibility, I'm very diplomatic and democratic, so I go by criteria and
yes
not
no,
by
sir.
Swindling. No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So in other words, Sia would not have allowed you to circumvent the proper judging process.
Yes. And in other words, I'm a great judge.
Well, you'd recuse yourself if something was Ben's.
I just tested you and you gave the right answer. So, yes, well done.
Thank you. Yes, a lot of people, actually, because the judging panels consists of a bunch of different professionals, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, people in the media space or communication space or through and through PR practitioners. So some of them actually have to step back and say, look, I didn't expect my submission to land this far and actually get shortlisted for an award. And now I'm here as a judge and I feel like that's kind of two timing. And so they have to step back a couple of times, which I think is honorable. But it was very interesting to do it. I think this is now my third year in a row.
Yeah.
You've
become a bit of a fixture. Mm. Are you a powerful person in PR now?
You're like the old Real Madrid of PR.
I don't get the sporting reference. Are they good?
Well, Real Madrid did so well in the Champions League. They were like the best.
Let me use a reference he might know. You're like Eddie from Pats and Eddie and Absolutely Fabulous, who is a PRs.
All right, let's go with that. Yes. I am the Real Madrid. I'm part of the Real Madrid.
Fine. We're just throwing things over his head this morning.
Yes. But as much as the awards will be happening in about 2 or 3 weeks,
uh-huh. I still got a chance to influence someone?
No, the judging process is done. The award ceremony is happening in 2 or 3 weeks. That's when all of the winners will be announced.
I do admire the way that Ben tries to influence things in an illegal way. He's learned how to be a good South African.
He's learned how to be a South African.
You want to be corrupt. You want to try to bribe someone. That's the way Ben sees things.
Well,
and Leanne as well, actually, I think
influence is probably a better word.
Leanne as well?
Leanne was asking me, so like, I have this client.
Uh-oh. Jeepers. I mean, I do it in the open. Leanne did it on the sly. Did she accost you at the car park with like a tray of cookies?
Ben and Leanne are like Basasa here.
Sly, horrible people. That's what's going on. So the award ceremony is happening in the next 3 weeks, but it's very interesting to have seen some of the biggest campaigns in South Africa in the past year that have made us really, really speak out a lot. Mm-hmm. I can't exactly like mention them, but no, you know, sure, some of the ones that we've even raised eyebrows on here on the show, whether we think it was, you know, honorable or not, was it tasteful or not. And
like the Nomuzi case comes up for judgment by the PR people.
I didn't say anything, but I'm just saying it was interesting to hear then the deliberation around the rooms when it came to certain high profile cases. Okay. People saying, oh yes, but you know, brand exposure and you know, this many clicks and this many impressions, because you know, that's what
I hope you made your opinion heard. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Sia comes with unpopular opinions, like it wasn't, was it tasteful or not, or you know. So
you,
as
you,
much
so you're the controversial guy from Cliff Central.
I wouldn't have been called
be the last time Sia gets
asked. That's Sia Sangweni, just so controversial.
So in 3 weeks' time, then I'll be able to blab on and on and on promptly about what we discussed. But it's quite interesting to be exposed to these things.
So, a couple of interesting things I want to warn you about so that you can prepare your schedule accordingly. Number one, we got Daniel Barron on this morning. He, of course, is a South African singer. He's been on CliffCentral.com a number of times. We've played some of his songs, and we know Daniel well. Hardworking dude. He's written a couple of really good songs. He claims David Guetta has stolen one of his songs.
Sure.
Now, usually when I see these things, I just, you know, disregard them, because there's music is... Every song is interrelated to every other song in some way, shape, or form. There are only 8 notes on the keyboard. There's bound to be stuff that sounds similar. It's why you can mix songs together if you're a moderately talented DJ. And before you know it, you've got something that sounds like a new song, but it's actually 2 old songs mixed together, and the words changed and the melody adapted and transposing taking place. And there's a whole lot of stuff you can do, and you don't have to be a musical genius to get that right. But there only are 8 keys, and there are the flats and the sharps. That's what you got in a keyboard. So you've got do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, and then that's it. Then it repeats. So I always get a bit nervous around this, but we've got a clip that I'll play you, and you can hear for yourself, and you decide, and we'll get Daniel to explain why he's feeling pissed off with David Guetta and how David Guetta might have stolen this.
Well, right. This sounds very interesting. Yes. Have we got the audio, the visual?
We got everything. Evidence. We got all the evidence.
The judge, the jury.
This morning we will be judging like Sia did the prisms yesterday.
Okay.
The other thing you need to know, tomorrow is the last burning platform with Canthan Pillay, because, of course, Canthan is now a political candidate for the elections. But we thought we'd have him in one last time. And hopefully Pumi can come too, and we can do one last kumbaya for the burning platform as it is currently incarnated, because we can't very well have the leader of a political party hosting our current affairs show, can we?
Well, it would be nice if we had like a different party every week.
Well,
we can't have, as to your point, a full time.
Yeah, we've had in the last couple of weeks, we've had 1 or 2 people from each of the political parties come on, and we'll continue to do that running up to the elections. I've already recorded a nice long interview with Mangosuthu Buthelezi, nice interview with Kenneth Meshwe of the ACDP. Mm-hmm. I can guarantee you right now, Cyril will not make himself available to us. The ANC never does. Yeah.
He's busy on trains.
The EFF were our first political guests on CliffCentral.com, just to prove we might not agree on politics, but we believe they deserve a voice. And Julius Malema himself has been in here 4 or 5 times already to talk about the EFF. So the invitation has gone out to all the parties, and we thought it's probably a good idea to get Canthan in. We actually find out what the ZACP stands for tomorrow, and we can interrogate him a little bit, and then we'll find some other way of bringing him back into the show, because people like him, and it certainly can't be in a sponsored current affairs feature, but there might be a place where he can give us an update on what's going on with the elections. We can find out how his support's growing or declining. Because there have been some interesting polls in the last day or two. I saw biznews.co.za yesterday, which is Alec Hogg's website. They surveyed 1,000 people. Canthan came up as the 3rd most popular candidate.
Wow.
This is a party that's only, a couple of weeks old?
Mm.
And he's the 3rd most popular candidate after Cyril and Musi, which is incredible considering how many other people have been in the political game much longer.
And the great thing about that is, again, this is what we do on this channel, is that we've given Ganthan Pride this a platform to actually just share ideas, discuss things, and debate. So the guy's rounded, right? So if you have any interest, then you can listen to the Burning Platform. There's the guy's profile. That's what he's about. You've actually got something about him.
And then someone called Bernard Janssen, who sounds extremely white and privileged, says the purple car party or ZACP can just as well be called the privileged white English males on Twitter party, PWMT party, vote PWMT. So I think he's being sarcastic. But you do know, Bernard, that Canton himself is not white, and that out of the top 10 candidates, I think only 3 or 4 are.
Yeah, four. So Bernard, are you basically saying that
Bernard not doing his research?
These hardworking people who are not white are just like tokens.
But you know, I heard something interesting. Who was it who was talking to me over the course of the last couple of days? And they were talking to a bunch of women, and some women said and these women had said, well, they really like this shop or whatever it was, but it's run by a man. And I suddenly thought, you know, what a stupid way to think. Because that kind of thinking is precisely what's brought us Eskom. Like, I don't give a fuck what color or what gender the engineers at Eskom are. I want the best engineers. If all of them happen to be black females, great.
Yep.
I don't care. Do you understand? This is massively important. I don't give two shits what demographic groups someone belongs to if they're good at their job. Guess what I do give a shit about? If they're bad at their job, that makes racism a lot worse.
Sure.
And I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because it gives racists fodder to say, look at those people, and gender activists, and people who are sexist, and people who are misogynists. They then have ammo to say, look at those women, how they couldn't run Eskom. If they're competent, nobody has a problem. Have you noticed that?
Exactly.
Nobody ever walks into a place that works and goes, you know, the problem here is there are just too many Indian females. No one's ever said that, ever. But the minute a place doesn't work properly, guess what it does? It gives fertile ground to racists to complain, to say, look, the reason it doesn't work is because white males or because black females or whatever else they can find, to lump everyone together. Because what we do when things don't go right is that we turn on each other, and we do that in groups because we can't help ourselves. We're herd animals, we are tribal, and all our worst instincts come to the fore. So the minute someone complains, when nothing is going wrong, about how something is too white, too black, too male, too female, too old, too young, too rich, too poor, you know what they're really doing is projecting their own psychological and tribal insecurities, their own amygdala response to a situation, onto something that is completely unrelated.
That's quite awkward, Bernard, so you're projecting a lot.
Terribly. I mean, Bernard, you got to take a minute, do some research, calm the hell down, and stop being one of these people who's obsessed with what groups you belong to, because it makes you sound terrifically insecure. Like, stand alone. Stand as an individual, see how long you last in the wind. If you can't stand in the wind for a little bit, be bent this way or that way, have your opinions changed, be forced to think about things that make you a little uncomfortable, not have the safety of tribe or gender or race or class or family to run into, because that's your safety zone. That's where you go when you're threatened. Mm-hmm. Actually stand as an individual. See how long you last, because it'll strengthen you as a human being, and you'll come out of that being a little bit more sure of yourself rather than having to jump into these groups that make you feel a little bit better about how weak you actually are.
Yeah, because those groups are full of people like Jussie Smollett and Eusebius, and people like that.
Jussie Smollett. Talk about privilege.
That's a lump, right, but
let's talk about privilege. Let's talk about what privilege really looks like.
Yeah.
Because privilege isn't what the left has been telling us it is for the longest time. To be privileged, you hear Michael Jackson got away with fondling and fucking children.
Wait.
For how many years? And he was
a long time.
You know why he was privileged? Because he's a celebrity. That's the real privilege. It's Jussie Smollett.
Okay.
He makes up a hate crime, wastes hundreds of thousands of dollars of Chicago Police Department time and money. He does this for attention, and he does it to save himself from being written out of a job. He's an actor. He pays two guys below minimum wage, two Nigerians who, well, one was a cameo star on his show and the other one was a personal trainer, pays them to pretend to be white MAGA hat wearing guys at -6 degrees in Chicago. He's shown to be a complete fraud, but the privilege of being a celebrity gets him off the hook. For how many years was Bill Cosby privileged?
Yeah.
Until eventually people said, no, you know what? Actually, we don't care how funny you are. We don't care how much money you have. There are now 50 or more women who've said, this guy's been abusive. He's been a serial rapist. Only then do we crack the veneer. It takes 50 women to crack the veneer of celebrity privilege.
Gareth, you...
Barbara Streisand. I just want to finish this one. Barbara Streisand. A woman of great talent, sure. But of fucking no brains. Comes out and says something that's insensitive. I mean, if anyone else who wasn't in the left-wing, democratic, coddled celebrity wing of America, if anyone else said something that I'm about to quote directly from Barbara, basically that she said, these people didn't die. Michael Jackson needed some outlet for his sexual urges. Can you imagine if anyone else said that?
Imagine if Donald Trump said that.
If Donald Trump said, you know what, this Michael Jackson, he also needed to fuck, and he happened to like kids. Can you imagine what people would say? They would be calling for his head. Barbara gets a free pass. You know why? Celebrity privilege. So you want to talk about privilege? Let's adjust the lens a little bit to look at what it really looks like. And it's got nothing to do with the well-considered and made-up and academically backed privileged classes of people who are trans or people who are black or people who are poor or people who are Hispanic in America, people who belong to minorities, people who come from abusive households, people who are disabled. These are not the supposedly outside the privileged groups. If you can get into the celebrity group, now that's where you're really privileged. That's where no longer do the rules apply. Sure. Jussie Smollett just had all the charges dropped by the completely incompetent prosecuting authority in Chicago, the Cook County Prosecution Office. All the charges dropped. And they've retained his $10,000 bond. And they've said, you know what? Jussie did previous community service in an unrelated matter. And that absolves him. And all of this that he's done, just you wait till the Chicago Police Department have their say on this, because they spent a lot of time and effort having to clean up his mess. Let's hear what they have to say, whether they agree with this completely incompetent prosecuting authority and his own lawyers who say he's the victim. They're still going with this idea that he's the victim.
What I'm trying to figure out, when I heard the news yesterday and I was reading various articles, I don't understand how we got to this point. How do you get to a point in a legal process where state charges are dropped? But what I did read is that he could still face federal charges.
Yeah, that could happen.
So what's the difference between the two? But then firstly, how are they just dropped?
All you need is someone in the office who buys your bullshit narrative. And he might have gone there, and because he's a celebrity, he sits in the office with these ordinary people who are sometimes very impressed with that kind of thing. You know, the problem is objectivity doesn't really exist. So
even in the law,
even in
where
the law,
we'd like to believe it does.
Especially in Chicago, which is a very, very blue, very anti-Trump, very left-wing-led part of America. And there could be someone in that Cook County Police Department who goes, you know what, Jussie, we believe you. And that's all that's required. But don't worry, it's not over yet. For those people who actually do believe in justice, I do think that this guy has to be hauled over the coals. He needs to do some serious time, because what he's done sets a very bad precedent for other people who are just looking for attention. This is like calling 911 and saying something's happened when it hasn't happened. People go to jail for that. Just for reporting a false crime, you can go to jail.
Just back on the point of the state charges being dropped, whose decision, whose shoulders does a decision like that rest on?
Someone in the prosecution office. It's some low-level person, because they deal with hundreds of cases. And this one comes up, and maybe Jussie knows someone who knows someone, or he uses his celebrity muscle, or he talks to someone powerful. I mean, he's got friends that are very powerful in Hollywood. Maybe he calls in a favor. We don't know.
Then it's just wiped out.
So it's different rules for famous people and different rules for ordinary people.
But it's quite a basic revelation for me to have. But this is why I think then you get cases where, you know, police would murder people or, you know, and then cases are just wiped off, just like that.
That's exactly right.
Did you hear what this?
I get the outrage to a certain extent now.
Yeah,
but did you hear what that shitbag said afterwards when
who?
He addressed the media?
Jussie spoke to the media.
Yeah, victim to the very end, basically saying how he was, he's been open and honest the whole way through, and he and he wouldn't be his mother's son if he wasn't this way, and this has been the hardest time of his life. Full victim,
and all of it, Jussie, was your own doing. You made this shit up. You can say all of that, but who did this to you? There's no one else. There was nobody else involved who did this to you. You did it all to yourself. So in other words, what you should be saying is, I fucked up badly and could have ruined my life, and luckily, because of my privilege, I've been rescued from this situation. That's what you should be saying, because no one else plotted against you. Yeah. There was no conspiracy. There were no MAGA hat wearing white dudes patrolling the streets of Chicago trying to beat up a black guy or put a noose around his neck. And you held onto your Subway sandwich the whole way through. So clearly, this entire incident was made up in your head, executed extremely poorly, and somehow, because of your privilege, you've been able to shrug it off, and now you're going to claim victimhood again. You've learned nothing.
So just going back to definition, what then is a federal charge?
Okay, so in America, you've got the states, and the states all run their own. You've got state judges, you've got state courts. They basically run their own little country within that state, and they have their own rules. Different states have different rules. So in Georgia, you have different rules to the rules you have in New York State, and New York has different rules to California. But then what happens is if the state feels that they haven't necessarily been able to prosecute to the full extent of the law, or that it's kind of like our appeals process in South Africa. So if you get if you go to the magistrate's court, for example, and they say to you, you're guilty of a violation of some kind, and they impose a fine on you, and you think, well, that's unfair, you can appeal that with the High Court. Mm-hmm. And the High Court will either throw it down and say, no, I'm sorry, that the magistrate's court was right, or they will give you leave to appeal, and you will then be able to appeal to that higher court, and they may have a different finding. And you can then also, if it's something constitutional, appeal to the constitutional court, ultimately. So there are these layers of appeal. In America, the highest court in the land is the Supreme Court, and that could be where these things end up, especially if they have to do with the Constitution or to do with federal matters.
Okay.
But usually the state can resolve their own issues. And this is mostly a state issue, but it could become a federal issue if prosecutors feel that something was done wrong along the way, or that it needs review, or it needs appeal.
All right. Now I'm clear on things.
So, Gareth, did you not say the other day that if you have to sacrifice one child for Michael Jackson's shenanigans to get a Billie Jean song, then so be it? Yes, of course, but you've got to be able to understand joking and when I'm not, you fool. I mean, can you imagine someone walking their child up to the gates of Neverland and saying, if I just give you this child, can I have a Billie Jean? It's ludicrous and hilarious in every possible way. If you don't see the humor in that, you are a literalist and a moron. So I can't help you. But obviously I was kidding. And at the same time, this proves the point that people don't understand, that Barbara was not joking.
That's just it.
Barbara was
being... Because the left never joke. They're not
Barbara
funny.
Was... No, she's got no sense of humor. I've never ever heard anyone say the words, Barbara Streisand, she's so funny. Have you?
Oh, that Barbara, that.
Yeah, such a card.
All right. Morning. I was listening to the podcast yesterday. You talked about people being the lowest of the low if they date a friend's ex. I started dating a friend's ex, and we now have been married for 10 years.
Nice. Ooh. True love. There's no boundaries.
All right, hang on. There's more here.
Yeah, is there context?
There's more people or more to that story?
Okay, no. It's just Grant and Nelspruit. All right, well, Grant, you
also
know what?
Also, that's Nelspruit, though.
Yeah, Nelspruit, there are only so many people, so you've got to recycle them.
No.
look, Grant, there are circumstances in each case that I can't sit here like, God, and imagine that I know every detail of this. Maybe the relationship that your friend and this woman were in before was not a very satisfying one. Maybe it wasn't really a deep and meaningful one. Who the hell knows? If you and her have been married for 10 years and you're happy together, then things ended up well for both of you. But I still have a problem with someone who deceitfully goes behind their friend's back and dates their ex.
Oh, that's shitty, yeah.
Didn't Simon Cowell do that?
Yeah, of course. And he's a slimeball.
He says,
slime
of course.
Ball.
Oh, okay.
No, because he's an absolute slimeball. And yeah. Anyone who believes that Simon Cowell has a single sincere bone in his body, this guy has gone from being the most awful prick on television who used to do everything he could to piss everyone off.
Wasn't a character.
Not a character. He didn't have to pretend at all. He sat there going, I'm not impressed with you. I think you're shit. All the way to crying every time a contestant comes on, and you don't think that there's something emotionally unstable about this guy?
And also, he wears a uniform. He wears black every day.
Which Sia does.
Ben, you bitch.
Ben, you bitch. All right, so there's a lot to discuss there, but honestly, Grant, I don't know your situation. I just think that on the face of it, when someone tells me that they have been cheating with a girl who's actually dating their best friend, it doesn't sketch the best scenario.
Yeah, you see, if it's cheating, I think that's a whole other different story, because no. I used to have a bit of a judgment in situations like this.
Yeah.
Up until I met a couple who, it's a man and a woman, and they got together through the woman's grieving process of leaving the husband.
Yeah, you know
and
that
the
happens.
Dude sure. is no. was the best friend to the former husband.
Oh, yeah, we all know someone who's gone through a situation where...
So I get it.
You know, sometimes people are close, but, they, but they're friends, and then that relationship breaks down. And then they've discovered they've got feelings for someone else.
You've just lost your friend, Bill.
If there wasn't cheating, different story. Because people do move in small circles. And especially, as Ben points out, in a place like Nelspruit, you've got to take what you can get. So
you go over to comfort Mary.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
bring
yeah, yeah.
a casserole.
Sure, of course.
You end up settling into the couch, staring into each other's eyes.
You go to the one bar that's not dodgy.
That's right. So here is some info from Sean from the Washington Post. I think it's about Jussie Smollett. The dismissal drew a swift backlash from the mayor and police chief. Oh, okay, so this is about Jussie Smollett. So, Sean, thank you for this. The dismissal of Jussie's charges drew a swift backlash from the mayor and police chief and raised questions about why Smollett was not forced to admit what prosecutors had said they could prove in court, that the entire episode was a publicity stunt. Among those should keep pressing for answers is Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who appeared blindsided by the decision, his voice rising in anger at times. Emanuel said the deal, called the deal a whitewash of justice and lashed out at Smollett. He said Smollett had exploited hate crime laws meant to protect minorities by turning laws inside out, upside down, for only one thing, himself. Sure. Where is the accountability in the system? Emanuel asked. So, apparently, yes, the police and the mayor are very pissed off. Thank you, Sean, for that update.
See, if Jussie Smollett had, like, half a brain, which we know he doesn't, he would have got to address the media yesterday and said, look, I got caught up in the game. I was acting out of character. I don't know what I was doing. Anyway, please forgive me. I've made a mistake. Peace out, Trump 2020.
No, that...
Or you could have ended that a sentence or two ahead, and okay. People like me would have said, you know what, cool. At least you've finally come around. You've learned something from this. It's like if the media would just admit, in the wake of the Mueller report, that they were completely wrong and they fantasized about Donald Trump being ousted from office. It was all a fantasy. I would say, you know what? It's time to give the media some credit. They can learn from their mistakes. But what this is doing, what this entire fiasco around Russian collusion has done, and mark these words carefully, because I've thought about this. I've listened to a lot of different points of view. I heard Chris Matthews on American television. I've heard Bill Maher. I've heard people on U.S. news programs, on CNN, Chris Cuomo. I've heard these people try and explain what is an inexplicable situation to them. Here's what happened. The left and the mainstream media in America believe in fantasies. They believe in a utopia that Bernie Sanders is going to create for them, that government will come and solve all their problems, that Donald Trump is a bad man. They believe in these fantasies. And the fantasy here was Robert Mueller's going to deliver a report that will mean Donald Trump can be impeached. They were saying things like, I quote here from Chris Cuomo on CNN, This is bigger than Watergate, is what he said. You had the FBI, the CIA, former intelligence bosses saying, Donald Trump is going down, this is a bombshell. The noose is tightening around his neck. All this kind of language. Now, the report's been released. No collusion. Complete exoneration of Donald Trump. And what do we hear from them? Crickets. Do you know why? Because somehow, instead of admitting that they're wrong, looking in the mirror going, it was all a fantasy, I was believing in a childish wish-thinking idea. Because I don't like the guy who's in charge. I mean, this is like children do this. They go, there's going to be a man on a white horse who comes and rescues the maiden from the dragon. And then when it turns out that according to objective, factual evidence, 2,000 subpoenas.
Wow. That's thorough.
Hundreds of indictments. Millions of people following these stories on all the fake news media about how Donald Trump is in collusion with Russia. Turns out after all of the investigation over 2 years that the President of the United States is not guilty of collusion. And we've got Rachel Maddow who goes on TV and starts crying because her president isn't going to be impeached. Don't you see how insane you must be? And instead of the media admitting, look, we were wrong. We're living in a fantasy world where we were cooking up a story that was the real collusion. We made up a story that influenced the elections. We made up a story that helped Hillary Clinton trot out this bullshit that she actually won the election. That's the real collusion. Is the media are owned by their own fantasies. Would they admit it, look in the mirror and say, we were wrong? Hell no. Instead, what do? No, there's still a chance we can get this guy out. You have been wrong every step of the way. Donald Trump, no matter how much you hate him, no matter how many times he said this is a witch hunt, which it was, no matter how many times he said, I am innocent, I've done nothing wrong, no Russian collusion, he called it a hoax, he was right. You were wrong. The worst part about this for the media is his whole fake news media thing turns out to be 100% true too. Donald Trump cannot stop winning, and it's driving these people insane. And it's smashing their childish fantasies against the rocks, and they've got nowhere left to hide. The fact that someone like Adam Schiff on the Intelligence Committee, who's been trotting out this collusion shit for 2 years, hasn't resigned in shame and gone to hide away from the bullshit he's been putting out there is outrageous. That's what Kellyanne Conway said. She's the spokesperson for the president and his counsel. And honest to God, you can look for any amount of evidence you want now, but it's going to be very, very difficult for you unless you just admit you don't like Donald Trump. Orange man bad. And that's where your argument ends. You've got no evidence. You've got nothing to back you up. Fantasy is not reality, and reality always ends up winning.
But it's interesting how these cases, right, and going back to Jussie's Smollett, there's a lack of shame, which just goes to show there's no lack of reality. There's never any reality with
That's
these
it.
People.
It's fantasy. It's childish.
Like, shame
so
is
it's
part
a prolonged,
of life.
It's a prolonged adolescence. That's why so many people who would vote for leftist parties still living with their parents, or they're still at university in their 30s, or they're still trying to get a job and never end up doing that, they're losers. And they can never face reality. Reality's too ugly. It's too hard. It means they have to be accountable to themselves. It means no one's going to save them. And when this thing breaks down around them, they have to look in the mirror and realize it's a disaster brought about by themselves. Jussie Smollett, Barbara Streisand. I'll go back to all of those in a minute. But we've got to move on. We've got so much to talk about today. The five things you need to know. Let's see how many of these we can crack out in a second.
I know how many.
Five. Well, maybe we'll only get through three. Let's see. Duda Zanizuma. Duda Zanizuma's back in court. A passenger in a taxi that was hit in an accident involving Duda Zanizuma told the Randburg Magistrates Court on Tuesday that the former president's son was speeding when his Porsche hit the minibus taxi. Again, privilege. Privilege, privilege, privilege. Because he's the president's son. If you or I or anyone else killed someone by speeding our Porsche into their taxi, I mean, it couldn't be a more privileged thing. You're in a Porsche. They're in a taxi. You're the president's son. They're just some poor person who's going to work. You kill them. You get off scot-free. And you live in Dubai for most of the year where you are not responsible to anyone. And you can spend all the money that you and your cronies stole from the South African government and from the South African taxpayer. There has never been a better illustration of privilege than this story, I submit. So that one, the less said, the better. David Makura has defended an old photo that was taken with the Alleluia Ministries pastor. You know, David Makura is the premier of Gauteng. And in these elections, who knows if he'll still be the premier in Gauteng, because it's not as if the ANC have covered themselves in glory in the province of Gauteng. But he had a photo taken with Pastor Elf Lukau, who's the one who made up that resurrection story, the person in the coffin who woke up. So David Makura has said that the old picture of him with Elf Lukau has been doing the rounds on social media. I was invited there as a public representative to be with the congregants. My presence was to share the sermon with them. At the time, I had no reason to question the authenticity of the church. Yes, but you see, Premier, when you filthy politicians mixed with filthy religious bigots and liars who are trying to screw over their congregations, when the poor congregation has to be screwed over twice, there's always going to be some fallout. And I'm afraid this is what we see. There must be a wall between the church and state. If politicians come to your church, you should leave that church. I'm talking to you as a congregant now. The minute the slime ball that professes to be in conversation with God brings a politician to address you in an election year or any other time, you should become suspicious of that pastor. Politicians have no place in church, and church people have no place mixing with politicians. And when the two get together, it is a recipe for disaster. And if David Makura finds himself defending this now, it's because people know that there's something ugly about the mixing of church and state. Boeing has held test flights for those 737 MAX crashes, and they've decided to look at what the fix might be. U.S. aviation authorities will defend their certification methods for new planes before lawmakers on Wednesday. And Boeing has flown test flights of the 737 MAX to evaluate a fix for the system targeted as a potential cause of the crashes. Can you imagine? This is where sometimes you need a person to be in control, not machines. You imagine you're a pilot, and the machines take over on the plane, and suddenly you're accelerating, and you're slowing down, and you're accelerating and slowing down. That's what they said happened. Sometimes the machines aren't the solution, right?
It's freaky to think about.
Last two things. PIC has welcomed a ruling setting aside the CIPC order. Do you know what that means? The High Court of Pretoria has ruled that the CIPC cannot compel the PIC to recoup the money it invested in IO. In other words, you know what the Public Investment Corporation is? They have welcomed the High Court's decision there. The public, they take state pensions and government employee money and investments by the state, and they then put that money into what they think will be places that it will grow in, right? That's what their whole job is. And they've welcomed the High Court's decision that sets aside a compliance order to recoup $4.3 billion from IO Technologies. That was unlawful, according to the court. The PIC said the court made an important finding that the CIPC failed to afford the corporation its constitutional right to be heard prior to issuing the notice. It's mostly a technical ruling, but still, if we can get some of that money back that the PIC has invested in very bad companies, then so be it. And then just quickly on the cyclone. Cyclone Idai's deadly hit has left 1.85 million people in need of assistance in Mozambique, in a catastrophe that the United Nations has called an alarm bell about the disasters and dangers associated with climate change. The cyclone ripped through neighboring Zimbabwe and Malawi, killing at least 686 people. I hear this death toll going up and down the whole time. Obviously, it's very hard to find out how many people have been killed and how many people have been displaced, and there'll be much more information over time. But that's what we've got so far. All right, just because we haven't done it for a while, Bitcoin, $4,000. And Ethereum at 137.
What does that mean, Gareth?
Well, it's up a little bit, Ben. It's up a little bit. Let's check in with you. What's going on in sport?
Otis Gibson, is he neglecting domestic talent in SA? Mick Schumacher is maybe doing F1. And World Rugby, well, no one likes them.
No one?
No one.
Okay.
Yeah, let's start with World Rugby, seeing as no one likes them. So let's just try and make them feel important once this month, this year.
That's right.
So, you know, they've got these great plans of just revolutionizing the world game. So basically the Rugby Championship will now have, I don't know, six teams, something stupid. They're going to throw Japan and America and, I don't know. They want to have lots of teams, Gareth, basically. Basically, whoever's not a South Sea Island team and whoever's not a Northern Hemisphere team, that must now be lumped into the Rugby Championship. Then what they want is, they want the Six Nations to have promotion relegation, and then basically the winner of the Six Nations takes on the winner of the Rugby Championship. All sounds lovely, but there's more to it than that. But what I find interesting about this story is that England are saying, oh, no, we can't have promotion relegation in the Six Nations. It'll financially ruin a team. Now, England are kind of thereabouts as winners all the time, right? They're in the top three, absolute worst. We all know this, basically, this whole thing is a screw Italy. Italy get the wooden spoon every single year. But England are saying that they are so frightened about financial ruin because of promotion relegation that how can we have to sell Twickenham if we were to be out of the Six Nations for 2 years? Because ultimately, you're not going to have this promotion relegation thing in the year of a Lions Test Series or in the year of a World Cup. So that's every when you get relegated, you'll be out for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying, oh no, this will be financial ruin, which means that they don't have a very positive outlook on how their rugby goes, because we all know it's Italy. Basically, what World Rugby are trying to say in a roundabout way is, we want to can Italy.
Yes.
Nothing to do with these guys, but they're having a little bit of a bitch fit about it. Anyway, World Rugby, they haven't considered this very, very well. We all know this. Everyone's come out and said your global system or whatever is a pile of bollocks. And players have to rest. They can't have a 365 season. It's all bollocks. So the thing about this is that when England speak out, World Rugby are stuffed. If South Africa or Australia or Fiji or Japan speak out, World Rugby is like, well, we own you, bitch. So now the fact that England's doing it, it's kind of like the ICC wanting to say stuff in cricket, and then India's like, no. That's kind of how the situation is. But speaking of the cricket, Ashwell Prince has been, he's been talking up this young ginger from Cape Town solidly the last couple of weeks. Kyle Verena, he's 21.
Yep.
He was pretty decent in the Super League. I mean, this guy's domestic form is fantastic, right? Both the white ball and the red ball. So in the one-day tournament that's happening right now, he's averaging 64.66. And in the four-day challenge, he's averaging 44. Now, he's a wicketkeeper batsman. Now, Quinton de Kock obviously is the greatest in that discipline in this country. That's why he's a shoo-in for every time the Proteas play anything. The Proteas could play with a beach ball.
Yes.
Or play frisbee. They'd probably pick Quinton de Kock because that's just who he is. So they're going to go to the World Cup without a backup keeper. They're going to give the gloves to David Miller should anything, God forbid, happen to Quinton de Kock. And Ashwell Prince is saying, well, why not give this guy a try? He's showing himself. He steps up each and every time. Yes, he's young, but he's the kind of player that we should be throwing into the mix here. And he physically said that Otis Gibson has maybe been neglecting the domestic game. He doesn't know what's out there. He's just not thinking past his nose, so to speak. Now, we all know that Otis doesn't even live in this country. We've covered this topic before. He spends a lot of time in England, and then he comes out for training camps, and he's obviously here for the matches.
He doesn't want to be here.
Otis said yesterday that he's had his 15 names for the World Cup sorted in his mind for quite some time now, which sort of plays into what Ashwell Prince is saying, is that this guy isn't looking past the immediate, and this is the problem. But I tell you what the story also does unpack, is that we always hear about these coal pack deals, and the fact that we're losing players, and it's just such a terrible talent drain, all that kind of stuff. But we've got so much talent in this country, we really do. If we can just have it managed properly, we've got so much, we really do. We can outsource the talent elsewhere, who cares? We've got great players here. And this just really highlights that. Maybe not quite as good in rugby, but when it comes to cricket, we do have depth, I think. We really do. So the World Cup is, I think, 63 days to go now. And a story that might still be talked about in 63 days' time is Josh Butler's man-cadding. Now, if you don't know what a man-cad is, basically back in 1947, Vinu Mankad, an Indian bowler, ran out Australian batsman Bill Brown without bowling the ball. So he ran into bowl, Bill was out of his crease, he then basically removed the bails and said to the umpire, I want this guy out. Now it's seen as unsporting, hugely unsporting. Now Ravi Ashwin, basically he dismissed Joss Butler in a very sort of dick way, in that he was still in his crease, he waited for Butler to go, unbeknown obviously that Ashwin was going to do this, and he removed the bails. So this has been the biggest controversy right now in cricket. But I tell you what, let's simplify it, right? Because everyone's going, talking about, oh, it's against the spirit of the game. I tell you what, there is no such thing as the spirit of the game when guys are looking to win at all costs. Shane Warne touched on this. I mean, where's the sandpaper in the spirit of the game? In Australia's win at all costs strategy, which basically blew up in their face recently. The Mankad's quite simple. If it's part of the game, and you can't be dismissed that way, let's just say every player has a chance of a Mankad, right? Just one. If he cocks it up, he loses the ability to do it again. So sure, go ahead. It's an extra entertainment feature for the game, okay? Let's not mess around. People are talking about this. People will now watch the IPL because of this Mankad. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. But let's just tighten up. Give it a formal law. Say you allow one Mankad per bowler. If the guy cocks it up, then you can't do it again. Yeah. There's a lot of cheating. There's a lot of line crossing, but that's just cricket, I guess. In golf, they're looking to pioneer something quite interesting this week. In the Jordan Mixed Open. Now, this is a Challenge Tour event, so it's not on the European Tour. But, Gareth, they're going to have a Challenge Tour player, a senior player, and a women's all-in-one tournament. How will they compete against each other, you ask here? Well, they'll play off different tees. So, naturally, the Challenge Tour player will play right off the back. The senior old git will go a little bit further forward. And then the woman will be on the women's tees. I think it's an interesting innovation. Let's not poo-poo it until it's tried. I think if it makes the golf tournament more entertaining, more colourful, and more diverse, that can't be a terrible thing. This is the great thing about golf, though, is that we all know through the handicap system, everyone can compete against each other. So if it goes to the system where we have women on those tees, I mean, obviously this will be messed up when, like, you get a Caitlyn Jenner playing, someone who's been a man for the last 30 years, then tees it up as a woman. That obviously will skew things, but we'll get to that debate when and if it happens. But I think this is cool. Guys are trying stuff. Always good. The big talk of the golf this week is, of course, the WGC Dell Technologies Matchplay. Top 64 players in the entire world will all be in Austin, Texas. So that means there are 16 groups of 4 players. All groups, everyone plays everybody, and then they progress from there. And then it's a match play format, so there's no stroke play. Basically, you play hole by hole. And then the winner on Sunday, after playing 36 holes, this is a very, very, very daunting week for the players, it really is, because you end up playing 36 on the Saturday, 36 on the Sunday, and you play Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday as well. Huge amount of talents on display here. Group 4 will see Justin Harding. He made his way into the top 50, the youngest African. He'll be taking on Roy McIlroy tomorrow. What a match that will be. I mean, this guy was dicking around in the Sunshine Tour with winter players who were living out of their boot. Now he's teeing up against Rory McIlroy. One of the greatest sports stories in quite some time, Gareth. It really is. There'll be two other South Africans in the mix there. Louis Oosthuizen, who's pretty much our only chance of winning this thing. He's in Group 11 against Tommy Fleetwood and Carl Stanley and Bjorn Ang, Ben Am, Korean guy. And Brandon Grace, he's the other South African in the mix here. He'll be in Dustin Johnson's group, the top group, number one seed, with Hideki Matsuyama and Chez Reavy. Go on, Chez. And then finally Mick Schumacher. That's the guy, the German guy, whose dad is Michael Schumacher. Mm-hmm. Yes. He will be testing with an F1 car on the 2nd of April.
Oh.
Yeah, see, now, if I said the 1st of April, you would have gone, cuck story, but no. He's doing it for the day after, so therefore it's true. He signed up for the Ferrari Driver Academy, and he's definitely looking to follow in his father's footsteps. Car tracks. Use whatever analogy you want. But he went in, on the back of his driver's jacket, it says here, keep fighting, which obviously is a reference to his father.
Yeah, we don't get very many. This is amazing that they've kept the Michael Schumacher story under wraps, because really, no one has any updates, no one has any pictures.
Mm.
If there's ever been a story that the media have been kept away from, it is this one, because this guy was the greatest thing in Formula One.
Yeah.
He had that skiing accident, and honestly, nothing comes out. You don't get pictures, you don't get updates, nobody knows whether he's in this state or that, or how much it costs to keep him alive. The family's been given a lot of privacy. Who knows, right?
It's so true. I mean, basically, his head injury was from a GoPro being on his helmet.
Wow, is that what it was?
Because that's what basically had a crash, and the GoPro went to his head.
Oh, God.
But, you know, for less scrupulous families, that footage would have been out.
Oh, yeah.
When you think of it that way, this family really has kept things incredibly private.
And it's also their team. You know, so often it's like a shoddy assistant who sells something off, or, you know, someone who's cleaning the house. So clearly all of these people are honorable.
Well, good on you, Mick Schumacher. It's going to be very difficult to try to beat your own path in this game. Obviously because of who your dad was, but good for him. 2nd of April, he'll be testing a Formula One car for Ferrari.
Thank you, Ben. Let's check in with Sia. Here is Said by Sia. We got a nice email from someone yesterday who said that, thank God for Sia.
Oh.
Listen to this. This is from Fern.
Finally, some good fan mail, Sia.
I know the country has its challenges, but we have to balance it out with good stuff that happens too. Thank you, Sia, for putting a positive spin on things when you can. It becomes so tiresome to hear what a shithole we live in every single day. From what I can gather, you guys all lead pretty good lives. You travel, go to restaurants, go to gym, you spend time with family. I, along with most forward-thinking people, wish that everyone had a decent quality of life. But going on about how crap it is achieves nothing. I'll read the rest of it just now, but it is kind of funny. So let's carry on. Sia, what do you got for us today?
Well, this is such a simple and sweet story, and wherever you stand on the point of religion, I think it's still so heartwarming to see this. When their religious neighbors found themselves without a place of worship due to a fire last week, their Jewish counterparts did not hesitate to open their doors. Now, I'm talking about an image that has been trending on social media from the past couple of days of hundreds of Muslims who were welcomed into a New York City synagogue after fire destroyed part of their Islamic Society of Mid-Manhattan Mosque. I think we hear so much about what Muslims are like or what Jewish people are like, and these people are just saying, we are putting all of that aside and we just care about getting along and accepting people for who they are. So the Jewish representatives of the Central Synagogue said that over 500 Muslims were welcomed to their synagogue so that they could safely use the space for their afternoon prayer. Oh, it is breaking news, I think.
Breaking news.
The rabbi from the synagogue, Rabbi Angela, actually was the one who posted a photo of the event on Facebook on Friday last week, and her post has already been shared thousands of times. The caption for the photo saying that their imam, this is from the Muslim side, said that this was the holiest moment he has experienced in New York, and it certainly was one of ours as well. So the Central Synagogue went on to say that they also felt inspired to share their place of worship with their Islamic neighbors after experiencing a fire in their synagogue more than 20 years ago. So they said it was without hesitation that we offered our space today to the Islamic Society to use for their prayer. As we approach Shabbos, we are thinking of our neighbors overcoming the difficult road ahead, but know they will rebuild. So in the investigation of the fire in the mosque, fire marshal says that the fire originated from a restaurant which is downstairs from the mosque, so there aren't any other suspicious causes, and the congregants are confident that the mosque will soon reopen. So really, wherever you stand on the side of religion, whether you believe or not, whether you're Muslim or Jewish, I just think this is heartwarming. People just saying, hey, come on, let's just, we're all one here at the end of the day, and I think that's sweet.
Beautiful.
That's a simple message we just need to have this morning. That's just it by Sia for the day.
Very, very nice. Interesting, U.S. civil rights legend Andrew Young was the guest speaker at the University of Johannesburg last week, where he advised everybody to stop counting on government to eradicate poverty and rely instead on themselves and the private sector. Interesting advice there from a civil rights activist of the 1960s, someone who stood alongside Martin Luther King in the civil rights movement, and went on to become a U.S. congressman, U.S. ambassador to the U.N., and then mayor of Atlanta, was at the university to receive an honorary doctorate. He said that we've got to stop relying on government. He said, government are not going to solve your problem. Governments have no money, basically.
Or ideas, or scruples, or talent, or application. Where should we go with that?
Do not count on government to end poverty. They're all broke. He's right. So there we go, an interesting Point that was raised by Andrew Young, the U.S. civil rights legend. Just another person putting a nail in the coffin of those people who believe that central planning and socialism and the left are the solutions to all of their problems. They really are not, and even people who you might have thought were on that ideological end of the spectrum are saying absolutely out of ideas, as Ben says, not just bankrupt in terms of money, but bankrupt in terms of intellectual ideas and capacity. So much to get into this morning, so many other things to talk about, so we're not going to get stuck yet. And don't forget Daniel Barron popping by a little later on. I'm going to talk to him about the situation he's in, where he's actually going after David Guetta. Yes, for a song that was stolen. Oh, yeah.
Very saucy.
Lots of stuff to talk about. So, plenty of good stuff still to come. Stick around, cliffcentral.com this morning, keeping you company.
This is cliffcentral.com.